They took a 3-inch long fish to court and won the right to restrict the flow of water to agriculture in California's San Joaquin Valley. Now, hundreds of thousands of acres and tens of thousands of people are out of work. Today, they are holding up the tiny fish in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to challenge Sacramento Valley water contracts dating way back to the 1880s. Their fight on behalf of the Delta Smelt and against California's agriculture leads us to ask, will the state of California survive the loss of its agriculture?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 664th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Guadalajara who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hi.
Also, producer Carol Stafford is out today, but we are here. Folks first, Michael Olson's first law of the food chain. Agriculture is the foundation upon which we build all our sandcastles. Now, when seen from way up in the sky, California's Great Central Valley appears to be one long, deep valley. But actually, it's two valleys standing face to face. The Southern Valley is called the San Joaquin after the river that carries its waters north to the San Francisco Bay and out into the Pacific Ocean. The Northern Valley is called the Sacramento after the river that carries its waters south to the San Francisco Bay and out into the Pacific Ocean. The place where the waters meet is called the Sacramento-San Joaquin River Delta. In the waters of this delta live a 3-inch long fish called the Delta Smelt. The Delta Smelt also has a home on the federal government's endangered species list. And because of this listing, the little fish has become the weapon of choice in the legal fight to control the flow of California's water. For example, the smelt was used in the successful legal fight to staunch the flow of water to the western half of the San Joaquin Valley. And today, hundreds of thousands of acres and tens of thousands of people are out of work. Now the Delta Smelt is being hauled into the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco to challenge the Sacramento Valley water contracts dating as far back as the 1880s. Given the incredible power of the tiny Delta Smelt and the 288 other threatened and endangered species to direct the flow of California's water away from its agriculture, we are led to ask, will the state of California survive the loss of its agriculture? Here to help us find an answer, we have Andy Hitchings, who is a water attorney with Somach, Simmons, and Dunn. Andy, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael. Good morning.
Pleasure to have you aboard. What on earth does a water attorney? Let me guess, you're out there in a canoe paddling around someplace?
Well, no, I'm actually sitting in my office here in Sacramento, looking at the winter tule fog right now out of my window.
Oh, yes. It's winter in Sacramento, which means tule fog. Brr. So what do you do as a water attorney in the capital of Sacramento?
Well, I've been practicing in California, went to law school here and took the bar here, and I've been practicing since 1991. I've been up in Sacramento since 93. And our firm, Somach, Simmons, and Dunn, we specialize in natural resources law with a particular focus on water rights, water supply, and also water quality matters as well. We do a lot of other work on related natural resource issues like the Endangered Species Act and the California Environmental Quality Act, National Environmental Policy Act, and the list goes on. But for the most part, many of our clients are water districts, agricultural districts, like irrigation districts that are in the case that you mentioned.
So you're representing water users then, essentially?
For the most part, we do some work for other types of clientele, and once in a while we do some work for other organizations like the Trust for Public Land and the Nature Conservancy, depending upon the matter itself. But our particular focus is, or a lot of our clientele are in the water user community.
Good. And who are you representing in this case currently before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals?
Well, Well, we serve as general counsel for the Glen Colusa Irrigation District, and they are our main client in this case. They are the largest irrigation district in the northern Sacramento Valley. They serve about 120,000 acres of land there. Most of the farms up there and the landowners, they're small family farms. They are distinct from and not like a lot of the large agribusiness farms that you may find down in the San Joaquin Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And that entity is situated both in Glen Colusa Irrigation District, that is situated both in Colusa County and Glen County in Northern California.
Well, we describe the Sacramento Valley as the northern half, the Great Central Valley, and it really drains a substantial amount of territory, given that's where most of the California's water comes from, are the mountains in the northern part of the state. And so who else is involved with this dispute over water contracts? It's not just farmers, is it?
No, it's not. It's originally this case that you're describing that is now before the Ninth Circuit, it was heard in the Eastern District Court, U.S. District Court in Fresno, and it involved a number of parties. It was a case brought originally by a number of environmental organizations, mm-hmm. against the United States, but then a number of other water users, both urban and agricultural, intervened or were otherwise joined in the case as it proceeded.
So we're talking about the city of Redding.
Yes, in the northern Sacramento Valley, the city of Redding is one of the parties in the case that we're representing. Reclamation District 108, another large reclamation district that serves a number of acres in the Sacramento Valley. There are about 28 so-called Sacramento River settlement contractors that are parties to the case and now find themselves with their contracts under attack in the Ninth Circuit.
Well, who gives these entities contracts for water?
Well, these parties, the Sacramento River settlement contractors, they are, many of them, Glen Colusa Irrigation District in particular, they have water rights that are independent of the United States that go back to the late 1880s, and many of the others.
What do you mean independent of the United States?
Well, they filed for water rights under California's water appropriation system as it existed back at that time,
mm-hmm.
and they perfected their water right at that time. So since about the late 1880s, late 1800s, essentially, that district or its predecessors have been diverting water to serve beneficial uses, mainly agriculture, up in the Sacramento Valley. And the other Sacramento River settlement contractors are similarly situated. Their rights may have started back in the early 1900s, but in any event, they basically obtained their own water rights through California's water right priority system back at that time. And so they've been diverting since then and well before the construction of the Central Valley Project or the State Water Project.
Okay, so these folks have been, and these entities have been taking water sucking water out of the river for a long, long time then. And so the environmental organizations have brought suit against the federal government and said what? And exactly what is the problem?
Well, let me step back. One other, I think, piece of context that is important is that these large irrigation districts and other water districts up there, by virtue of the fact that they were already diverting water and had pre-existing water rights, when the United States came in to develop the Central Valley Project and build Shasta Reservoir, they had to reach a settlement with these districts and these entities in order for them to move forward with construction and operation of that project. And so that's why these contracts and these water users are fairly unique in the sense that the United States had to reach an agreement with them in order to facilitate the operation of the Central Valley Project, and that's why they're called Sacramento River Settlement Contractors.
Ah.
If they didn't have these contracts, they would still go ahead and divert water. They have their own facilities, their own diversion structures, their own conveyances. They don't rely on the water being pumped by the United States and delivered to them. Instead, they have a settlement contract which essentially recognizes their pre-existing right to divert water. And in exchange for that, they agreed that they would take it on a monthly schedule and agree to certain deficiencies in certain types of years.
So they're kind of like the first mortgage holders on the water then, aren't they?
Yeah, that's not a bad way to look at it.
Huh. I mean,
it's a good analogy.
Okay, folks, you're tuned into The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're taking a look at California's water and, of course, the fight for that water between, essentially, environmental organizations and the holders of water contracts in the northern San Joaquin Valley. With us today, Andy Hitchings, water attorney with Somac, Simmons & Dunn. Not with us today, by golly, are the environmental organizations that brought suit. Including the Natural Resources Defense Council, San Francisco Baykeeper, Earth Justice. They chewed me out all week for bringing this subject up, but refused to participate in the program, so we must proceed without them, reluctantly, but we will go on. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, will the state of California survive the loss of its agriculture? Right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Question of the day. Can the state of California survive the loss of its agriculture? Now, we're not talking about the geography of California, which, of course, will survive you and I quite well. There will be a Golden Gate. There may not be a Golden Gate Bridge. So we are talking about the state, which is, of course, one of our biggest sandcastles. Can it survive the loss of our agriculture? That's the question we're exploring with Andy Hitchings, who is a water attorney with Somac, Simmons & Dunn. This is The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson. And we're talking about the case of the water contracts, the northern Sacramento River Valley. A couple weeks ago, we picked up the case of the San Joaquin Valley, and we talked about farms or fish. And we talked with a farmer and a fisherman and came to the conclusion that those are two industries in deep doo-doo. Because there is simply not enough water to go around these days. So who's going to get the water? That's what we're looking at. We're looking at agriculture losing a substantial portion of its water. It certainly did in the San Joaquin Valley, and now the fight is on for the Sacramento River water. Andy Hitchings, let's pick up the Delta Smelt, if in a figurative sense, by the tail and give it a look. Have you ever seen one?
I've only seen pictures of them, Michael.
They're very, very tiny. But though they are very tiny, they're floating about and living in a very crucial part of California's geography, right?
Yeah, their main habitat is within the San Francisco Bay Delta area, which is essentially at the confluence of the San Joaquin and Sacramento Rivers.
So that's where California's two great valleys drain themselves into the delta there, and that's where the Delta Smelt lives. And how does this position in the geography of California allow this tiny fish to become such a powerful weapon in this struggle for California's water?
Well, the fish species has been listed under the Endangered Species Act as a threatened species, and as a result, it's afforded the protection of the Endangered Species Act, and that's really what this case was based on, whether the operation of the Central Valley Project and State Water Project was putting that fish in jeopardy, which would be in violation of the Endangered Species Act.
So it's right there at the very crucial point of California's geography. Anatomically speaking, I guess we wouldn't want to mention what part of the body that would represent, but it's a very important piece of geography, and this fish, this little tiny fish living in this geography, places it at the focal point of the struggle for California's water.
Well, and Michael, I should probably add is that the main diversion facilities for the Central Valley Project and State Water Project, which deliver water to the San Joaquin Valley and Southern California urban areas, mm-hmm. their main diversion points are in the Delta, you know, close to or within the habitat of
right.
the Delta smelt. And that's probably the case you were talking about
right.
a couple weeks ago. And in our case, the Sacramento River Settlement contractors that we represent, they divert water, you know, many of them or most of them, hundreds of miles upstream on the Sacramento River.
And yet the Delta smelt is still being held up in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, correct?
That is the issue that's being appealed to the Ninth Circuit by the plaintiffs in the case, the environmental organizations, is that by virtue of the renewal of those Sacramento River settlement contracts, that was not adequately analyzed, the effect of that, and that there would be an adverse effect on the Delta smelt by virtue of deliveries by the settlement contractors hundreds of miles upstream.
Did you watch the case going through the court on the San Joaquin Valley versus the Delta smelt?
Yes, we were part of that case as far as being involved in the remedies proceeding, just to the extent that there could have been an effect on the settlement contractor's interest. Fortunately, during that proceeding, the court indicated that it would not be addressing the plaintiff's claims as to those contracts, but we were certainly there and were a part of that proceeding to make sure our interests were protected.
Have you had the opportunity to drive up Interstate 5 through the San Joaquin Valley lately?
Yes, I have.
What do you see there?
Well, there clearly are a lot of issues with agricultural lands being taken out of production, with orchards and other permanent crops having to be taken out because of, in fairness, it's because of natural conditions as far as climate and drought conditions, but
mm-hmm.
it's certainly been quite exacerbated by the restrictions on the pumping.
Right. So
that has occurred.
So we're, you know, well into a multi-year drought. Things are very, very dry, and the natural flow of water is way, way, way down. And so the diversion of water from the Sacramento Delta into the water that's heading for the metropolitan area in Los Angeles and into the San Joaquin Valley farms is, you know, in contention. And when they shut it off, or did they shut it completely off?
No, they did not shut the pumps down completely, but they've been restricted a great deal from what they otherwise would have pumped without the restrictions or ESA restrictions.
Okay, so how is the San Joaquin case different than the Sacramento River case?
Well, in this case, what the plaintiffs they did not prevail in the trial court on challenging the Sacramento River settlement contract renewals. The court found that by virtue of the pre-existing rights and the language within the contracts of the Sacramento River settlement contract, that the United States really didn't have discretion to change the amount of water that would be diverted under those contracts or in accordance with those contracts by those parties. There's a Supreme Court case called the Home Builders case where the court indicated that if the United States doesn't have discretion over a certain decision, that it doesn't implicate the types of ESA analysis that you would do that could possibly shape that decision. So in this case, the trial court found that the United States didn't have discretion to change the amount of water diverted under those contracts. It's that ruling that the plaintiffs are appealing. I will say, though, that the United States has also filed an appeal in this case. At this point, they've indicated that it's a protective appeal because they're not sure what issues they may or may not pursue. And for the settlement contractors, even though we did prevail below, we are appealing a collateral ruling in the case where the court made a ruling about a certain liability provision in the contract that could affect our ability to divert a certain amount of water under our contracts. And so we're appealing that to get some clarity on what the impact and what the import of the trial court decision is on that.
Now, what is the federal government appealing? Whose side are they on?
Well, at the trial court level, they obviously lost on the validity of their biological opinion, and that's what ultimately resulted in the additional constraints on pumping in the Delta.
Mm-hmm.
But they did win alongside us on upholding the contract and the renewal of those contracts. And they've filed a broad appeal. They've indicated that at this point it's a protective appeal, just in the event that they want to preserve the issues on appeal at this time. But we're not quite certain at this point what they may or may not pursue. But in any event, the plaintiff's cross appeal and our cross appeal are before the Ninth Circuit.
Okay, and of course the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is famous throughout the world. People in Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, know all about the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco, right?
Well, it's one of the largest circuits in the country, and you know it covers from Alaska down to the bottom of California and covers Hawaii and a number of western states. So it is well known.
Okay, we're going to visit the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals and talk about the fight there when we get back. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking with Andy Hitchings, who is a water attorney with Somac Simmons and Dunn. We're talking about the fight over Northern California's Sacramento River water between agriculture and the environmentalists who want to restrict that flow to whatever minimum they so desire. These environmentalists, that organizations that are bringing the suit, Natural Resources Defense Council, San Francisco Baykeeper, Earth Justice, refused to participate in this discussion for one reason or another. So we have Andy Hitchings, who is a brave man, willing to stand up, and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Well, the fight is on for what's left of California's water. We've been in California. It's been in drought situation for many years now, it seems like. And what's left of the water is needed by everybody, including, I guess, the metropolitan areas of California. And the metropolitan areas of California have the vote and have the money, so they're going to get their water. Also by agriculture, which is one of California's premier industries, premier in the sense that agriculture actually manufactures money from raw materials. It doesn't shuffle money from one side of the desk to the other. It actually manufactures it. And in a state that is broke beyond belief, that industry is very significant. Also fighting for the water, of course, are the fishermen in California. We've essentially lost our salmon industry because the salmon aren't spawning in the rivers anymore because the rivers are too warm and too low. So everybody wants the water, and who's going to get it? And the consequences are quite huge for a state that is, as I said, broke beyond belief. With us today to discuss this issue, we have Andy Hitchings, who is a water attorney for Somac Simmons and Dunn of Sacramento, California. Not with us today are the environmental organizations that brought suit in court and are now in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, Natural Resources Defense Council, San Francisco Baykeeper, and Earth Justice refused to participate in this conversation. How come, Andy?
Well, I'm not sure why, Michael, that they would participate. I mean, they've certainly gotten their story out through press releases of their own after they appealed the case, so not sure why they wouldn't participate in the discussion. But in any event, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. I guess they're kind of becoming like the United Farm Workers Union, who like to do their talking with press releases to friendly press people, and then they hide behind those. We're regretting that they're not here, but they're not here, and that's the way it is, so let's move right on. What we have is a situation in Northern California that resembles, in some respects, what happened in the San Joaquin Valley, where much of the water to agriculture was restricted, and if you drive up I-5 between Los Angeles and San Francisco these days, you see thousands of signs that say dust bowl, courtesy of your congressman or something like that. So it's really not the federal Congress that's responsible for the dust bowl, is it?
Well, you know, what it is if the Endangered Species Act has been the federal law that has been used here by the plaintiffs' organization, it's been used by them as a means to protect the species of concern, but the resulting impact of that is that it has had a huge adverse impact on agriculture, and ultimately it's the judiciary, the federal courts, that are interpreting and applying the Endangered Species Act as passed by Congress to the particular circumstances of the case before them.
You know, when I asked the environmental organizations to appear on the show, each one of them suggested that I get a fisherman instead. And, you know, I did a fisherman on the last program that we did on this issue, Farms or Fish. And, you know, it's pretty hard to disagree with the fact that the fishing industry is hurting as well. But I'm thinking that the, you know, the environmental organizations are standing behind the fishermen, but they're doing all of the heavy lifting. The environmental organizations are bringing the lawsuit, not the fishermen. I got to thinking that, you know, the environmental organizations really represent city people, I think. I might be wrong. But I think environmental organizations represent we city people who sit in cubicles all day shifting paper from one side of the desk to the other, or binary digits from one computer to the next. And you know, in our sterile cubicles, we think about nature out there and how precious it is, and how we need to preserve it. And I think a lot of us resent agriculture for being out there, you know, generating profit on natural resources. And I might be wrong, but I think that's really who the environmental organizations are representing. Am I wrong?
Well, in this case, there were not any fishery organizations per se, as far as commercial fishery associations in the Delta Smelt case. The plaintiffs did have a companion case that challenged the biological opinion that the National Marine Fisheries Service issued with its analysis on Chinook salmon and other anadromous species. And there were actual fishery organizations that were plaintiffs in that case, the Pacific Coast Federation of Fisheries. But in this Delta Smelt case, no, it does not have the Commercial Fishery Association or Industries as one of the plaintiffs in the case.
So it's just the environmental organizations then?
That's correct, including in this case it would be the Bay Institute and National Resources Defense Council and a number of kind of Bay Area environmental organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one thing that's related to that I do want to point out is that when you go up the Sacramento Valley, much of the irrigated agriculture up there is rice agriculture.
Right.
And there are a lot of beneficial habitat values that rice fields do provide.
Lots of birds, lots of fish, lots of everything up there.
Yeah, and there is, you know, it's integral to the Pacific Flyway, and also it does provide, you know, rice field habitat does provide habitat for other species of concern up there, including the giant garter snake. So you've got to be very careful that you're not solving a problem in the Delta by then adversely impacting environmental and public trust values that agriculture helps support up in the Sacramento Valley, and that's important. The farmers and growers up there look at themselves as stewards of the environment at the mm-hmm. same time that they're trying to make a living off the land.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the odds against agriculture in this situation. What I see, of course, is a situation in which what is left of California's water is first going to flow to cities, to people, to the Los Angeles Metroplex. That's where water's first going to go, because that's where the vote is, that's where the money is, and there's nothing that can turn it away from that power. Then, perhaps, because of the backing of the environmental community, it'll go to the fish, which is to say, to keeping a good flush on the Delta, and then to agriculture, which is, I guess, used to be number two on the list, but is probably number three, or maybe even number four. And it's got a huge obstacle to overcome in that the Delta Smelt is at such a critical place in California's geography, and it's endangered. It's listed on the endangered species list. So, wow, that's a formidable force to go up against that little fish in that very powerful place. But the Delta smelt is not the only endangered or threatened species in California. There's 288 other threatened or endangered species. So, you know, the opposition to water going to agriculture have a lot of ammunition. So when we come back from this break, I'd like to ask Andy Hitchings, how on earth agriculture is going to survive that much competition? This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, and you are invited to participate in this program. All you have to do is pick up your phone today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1980. The question of the day: will the state of California survive the loss of its agriculture? Now, we're not talking about the geography of California. We're talking about the state, that sandcastle that we build to hold our communities together. Will that state survive the loss of one of its only industries that actually manufactures money? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Well, folks, who's going to get the rest or what's left of California's water? Will it go to the cities? Of course it will. The cities have all the money and all the votes, so you know water's going to go to the cities. Will it go to agriculture, or what's left go to agriculture second, or will it go to the fish? What do you think? It seems to be the environmental community is behind the fish. So the water will go flow away from agriculture out to the ocean and support the fisheries. But if that's the case, how will agriculture survive? And if agriculture does not survive in California's Great Central Valley, will the state of California survive? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1980. Andy Hitchings with me. Andy, there's the Delta smelt, and there's 288 other threatened and endangered species. And yet you're standing up and fighting for agriculture. Do you feel like General Custer at the Greasy Grass?
Well, sometimes that is the case, and certainly our clients feel that way. Maybe I'll just share a quick anecdote on this. When you talk about water going to cities and being taken away from agriculture, you know, one of the things we find ourselves is that there's really no shortage of environmental plaintiffs organizations willing to challenge, the agricultural uses as well as water transfers. These organizations are somewhat ubiquitous, and I will share a story. The last couple years, a number of the Sacramento Valley growers have tried to engage in water transfers to help with the state's water problems. And mm-hmm. one of the issues they found is if they've agreed to fallow their lands for a year,
they don't get any more water.
Well, what will happen is the water that would be freed up by that would then be able to be travel through the delta and then be diverted downstream.
Right.
But we've gotten pushback from environmental organizations saying that, no, you can't fallow your fields. You're going to have an impact on giant garter snakes, which is another one of those 200. So it is somewhat ironic that they're saying, well, we want to cut back the water that you can divert, serve your fields, but you need to continue growing so that you don't impact the species that are reliant on habitat that your rice fields provide.
I guess you could file that under damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Well, that is true, and I think a lot of people think that some of these environmental organizations and the legal teams that support them are in some kind of groovy, hippie, laid-back office in San Francisco, but that's not the case. Many, particularly in this case, there's very sophisticated legal teams that are that are very good at what they
very,
do.
Do you think that I'm right in thinking, in just imagining that the environmental organizations are really representing we city people who are sitting in our cubicles, longing for some kind of nature to hold on in there?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure what goes through that. I do believe that there is a sincere mission to try to protect habitat
and
natural resources, and for better or for worse, there are laws on the books that provide the ability to at least attempt to enforce that, and that's what's happened in this case.
Okay, let's go to the phones. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Will the state of California survive the loss of its agriculture. Let's go to Tim. Tim, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. Andy Hitchings and Michael Olson, go ahead.
Well, I was really disappointed that the Natural Resources Defense Council and Baykeepers and Earth Justice folks didn't show.
I was
really looking forward to their participation, and it doesn't speak well that sniffed you. Anyhow, my question, I'd like to enlarge the discussion.
Please.
From between farmers versus fishermen and urban versus agriculture. I think there's a discussion here that's not being voiced, and that is California is growing by 400,000 people per year. So what about the role of population growth, and more specifically, why aren't the organizations who didn't show up today talking about it?
Wow. Thank you very much for that one, Tim. Really appreciate it. Andy, what about the role of population growth?
Well, that has been a very touchy subject, particularly in the environmental community. I know that a couple of years ago it did create somewhat of a rift in the Sierra Club that there wasn't enough focus on dealing with those population dynamics in addressing these natural resource challenges. And I'm not sure what can be done on that. The problem is that growth will continue to happen to some degree. And if we don't try to expand our infrastructure and ability to serve that growth, we are going to find ourselves in even more dire circumstances as the years and decades go by.
Okay, let's go to Roy. Roy, welcome to the Food Chain. Michael Olson with Andy Hitchings. Fire away.
Yes, I was a little disturbed by your grandizing the total loss of agriculture, and it's, it's nowhere close to that, but... Well, I wanted to point out one thing about water that most people don't seem to understand or appreciate. When the California Constitution was formed, I think it must have had something to do with Samuel Clemens, because he said whiskey is for drinking and water is for fighting over. But what the Constitution of the state of California says, all water, 100%, all water that flows on the surface or below ground of the state of California belongs to the people of the state of California.
Mm-hmm.
And the state is required to put that water to highest and best use. Now, of course...
Which is?
Sometimes it was gold mining, but then they changed their mind. You change your mind with your condition.
What is the highest and best
now,
use?
What's that now?
What is the highest and best use, Roy?
I think the highest and best use is the best use for the public.
Well, what is that?
And I think that is some to feed you, some to support your natural resources, and some to support the people.
That being the case, Roy, do you think the state of California will survive the loss of its agriculture?
It won't lose its agriculture. What it'll do is make its agriculture more efficient. Right now, I don't know if you know or not, but most of the San Joaquin Valley's water supply is subsidized by the public.
Mm-hmm.
So inefficient farming methods are used for surplus crops like cotton and mm-hmm. alfalfa and things that use a tremendous amount of water. And in the case of cotton and even rice, the public has to pay a subsidy for the growing of that.
Now, well, I've always been one who maintained that everything should cost what it costs.
Yeah, well, that's not the case with irrigation water. Well,
let me ask Andy. Andy, what about that? What about the subsidizing inefficient use of water by the public?
Well,
thanks, Roy.
Water efficiency, it really is something that you need to look at on a case-by-case basis. And clearly, I don't think the state or federal governments are trying to subsidize inefficient uses of water. In fact, for the most part, there's really been a push to increase water efficiencies, particularly in the last 10 years. There's all kinds of water conservation requirements. The state just passed the Delta Bill package, which has a very detailed push for additional water conservation requirements. So I don't think that those are really being subsidized or incentivized to waste water. To the contrary, I think it's the other direction.
So there you are. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll go back to the phones and pick up Mike and come back with Andy and you, 800-624-2665. Will the state of California survive the loss of its agriculture? Or am I just crazy for asking this question? It seems like the fight is on for what's left of California's water, and agriculture is last on the list. I might be wrong, but what do you think? Right back. Well, who's going to get what's left of California's water? My bet is it's going to go to the power of the people, and they live in the city. Mike, what do you think? Who's going to get the rest of the water?
Well, I've got a lot of opinion on this, and I think that we're all missing the boat in the way we're thinking about this. I mean, you know, the water wars, who's going to get it?
And you don't want to miss the boat when you're talking about water, right?
Well, when you look at the rivers in California, and that so many of them are dead or not nearly what they used to be, and it comes from population use.
Mm-hmm. And drought.
But we're fighting, and, you know, drought is a natural part of California that's always going to be there because of the high pressure systems we get. But from what I'm hearing this argument of, we're arguing how to keep the status quo. I mean, something big has got to change in this state. I mean, to give the farmers the water they want is to just advocate the continued degradation of California as far as, you know, the river systems and stuff, not just Sacramento, all of them.
Okay, we're out of gas here with respect to time, but thanks for the call. Andy, what about it? We're in trouble if we keep giving agriculture the water.
Well, it's not really a matter of giving it to agriculture. With the Sac River Settlement contractors, like I said, they've been they're pre-existing prior senior water right holders and
first mortgage holders.
They have a vested right to do that.
Hey, Andy, let me ask you the question: Will the state of California survive the loss of its agriculture?
Well, certainly the state of California can't survive an outright loss of all agriculture, and I don't think that that's going to happen. But you know, they've got to find a way to address these challenges, and I think it's more through an approach that's collaborative, not where you go into court and essentially try to get the courts to reallocate.
Okay, Andy Hitchings, water attorney, Somax Simmons and Dunn. Thank you so much for joining us, and tune in next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here in the Food Chain.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.